Welcome to The Advisor, where we dive deep into conversations with inspiring thought leaders and transforming lives into driving change. Today we're here, and I'm very thrilled to actually have on a very special guest today. Toby is a seasoned psychotherapist, author, and he is a thinker who helps people unravel the complexities of their own minds, overcome life's challenges, and find new paths to growth. Whether you're seeking clarity, emotional healing, or simply a better understanding of yourself, Toby's here today, and he's going to shine some light on the journey of human on the journey of humanity and the profound wisdom that we carry within ourselves that we can help arise and bring to new realizations. So, Toby, I'm really excited to have you on our show today. This is a great honor. I love psychotherapy, and I love how it has such a huge impact on people's lives. Can you tell us a little about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. Just to say, my name is Toby Ingham, not Ingram, just in
I'm
case.
sorry.
That's okay. So, yeah, I'm a psychotherapist. I'm based in the UK. I've been practicing about 25 years, and my interest really is in helping people to, understand the kind of things that may have made life difficult for them that they may have overlooked. So, for example, I will often think that it's not that there's something wrong with us so much as things have happened to us. But because trauma and difficult events tend to dysregulate us, it makes it difficult to remember what's happened to us. So often I meet someone and they will be at a certain stage in their life and they'll be complaining about one situation that's going on. And gradually we find that actually this isn't the beginning of the problem. This problem's been cooking for a long time. It's just it hasn't really had a chance to get any proper attention. So I try and build up and develop organic conversations with my clients and patients and just look for ways that we can start to understand more about what they've been through. And as we do that, typically people will start to settle and become a bit better regulated. And so life improves.
I love that. Now, every expert has a spark that ignited their journey. Toby, what was your moment or experience that set you on your path to becoming a psychotherapist?
I suppose it, that would probably relate to my own background and upbringing, which was which was complicated in some ways. There was early bereavement and the complexities that that brings to a family. And so I think I'm someone who had to spend time trying to work out what their own path was. And the more I looked into that, the more I found myself drawn to think about training and to work, and everything's followed from that. But I'm not someone who, went to a careers advisor and the careers advisor said, oh, try psychotherapy. I'm someone who I think emerged from trying to understand their own problems and developed a psychotherapy identity through that and on the back of that.
Oh, I love that. Now, your work touches on deep emotional concepts, but also practical tools for healing. How do you personally stay grounded while working with complex client challenges day after day?
I think it's incumbent upon a psychotherapist to have a good community of people that we can check in with. So I have a good supervisor I've worked with for a long time. When I can, I teach and get involved with trainings, which I find very grounding. And I always look to talk about my work. Typically, that will be at professional settings and presentations, though if I'm lucky, it's with you. But I think that, because our work is all confidential, it's good to find ways to come out of that bubble and see if you can share what's been going on and talk about it. And I'm particularly interested in being able to share things that might seem a bit difficult or strange or situations in which client work was particularly challenging. I've always been interested in trying to be very open and talking about the work I do without looking for judgment, or did you miss this? Did you miss that? But more to try and open up the range of meanings and possibilities in a conversation.
Oh, I love that. Now, so many people are still hesitate when it comes to that are in therapy. How would you encourage someone who's struggling but feels unsure about taking the first step into psychotherapy?
I would say that when you first go and see a psychotherapist, you're not getting into an obligation to do anything, okay? So you should be able to go along and have a conversation without any sense that you're getting caught up in, 6 months or a year or 5 years worth of conversations. This
Right.
conversation, this first one, should just be a chance for you to see what it feels like to speak with the person, see and feel what the chemistry's like. Now,
Right.
often the chemistry might feel a little bit difficult. Try not to be put off. Often it's those difficulties that are exactly the kinds of things that it's very helpful to look at.
Yes.
I would think before you go about, what's brought you, why you're here, what things you're interested to look at. I would think about what you can afford. I would try and be as organized as you can, but go into that meeting just to see what it's like. It's a
Right.
conversation. To my view, psychotherapy is a unique form of conversation, but it is really a conversation.
Right. I like that. Now, in a fast-paced world, mental health often takes a back seat. What are some of the everyday habits that you believe can help someone cultivate emotional resilience?
I think often it's very helpful if we can find ways to slow down. Most problems get worse the more we speed up and get caught up in them. But the
Yes.
more we can give ourselves the chance to take a step back, take a breath, slow down, create a bit of space between our reaction and whatever's happened, that tends to be quite settling and helpful. I would say be very careful around things like drink and drugs. If we are prone in any way to emotional instability, alcohol and drugs tends to be, very unhelpful in that situation and can be very confusing, right? But I'd say, slow down, don't do things that are bad for you if you can, and just try and find more ways to do things that are constructive and help your stability.
Are there any suggestions or any easy strategies someone can do, basically anywhere, either in their home or if they feel a sense of overwhelm or anxiety, something that they can do to get themselves to a level of calmness.
Well, I think, like we're saying, trying to find a way to just take a breath, step back, slow down, create a bit of kind of time out time just for you. Maybe jot a few things down about what's going on and what's been worrying you. If you've got a good confidential friend you can speak to them. If you have a therapist or a psychotherapist, speak to them. If we're lucky, we've got some good people in our lives or a good person in our life, and we can
Right.
go and talk to those people.
Yes.
But what we have to cultivate is ways of looking after ourselves.
Yes.
Because the more we can provide stability for ourselves today, the less we're going to be unpicking problems of today, tomorrow, if you see what I mean.
Right. Yes, I do. Now, therapy isn't just about solving problems. It's about creativity, unlocking freedom, and seeing the bigger picture. How do creativity and imagination influence your work with clients?
Well, I'm glad you've asked me that because I've just published a book called A Guilty Victim. And this is a case study. It's a true story of my work with a man who came to see me with low mood and depression and heavy drinking and so forth. And we worked together for some years. And in that time, he gradually found a way of letting his creativity come into the sessions. And one of the ways that that expressed itself was that he produced some drawings. I'll give you an example. I don't know if you can see that very well. Yeah.
Yes.
And these drawings are a timeline of his life. Okay. So one of the hopes of the book is that any of us might be able to draw out our own timelines. Where we've come from, what we've lived through, what are the key events. Anyway, I've called him William in this book, and he produced this timeline. And at the end of it, he said that he thought that this should be a book and that I should write words to go with the pictures. So the book, A Guilty Victim, is I think a rather interesting story about recovering creativity, after trauma and abuse. But that's one version of creativity. Psychotherapy is a very creative way of having a conversation.
Yes, it really is. Now, your latest book has been creating powerful ripples in the field. Can you tell us about the inspiration behind your book and what sets it apart from traditional self-help or psychological resources?
Well, the inspiration was that when William had, there were nine of these pictures, and when he was working on them, and they were really big and cumbersome, so he took them to a printer's to get a reduced version printed out. And when he went back to pick them up from that printing shop, the woman at the counter stopped him to ask him some questions about them. And he could see how interested she'd become.
Yeah.
And this had a profound effect on him. And he came to see me with the pictures, and he gave me a set of the pictures. This story is in the book. And he
Yeah.
said, "We had our first review." And it was that was the inspiration for for writing the book. Yeah, it was that. Was that the? There were. I think you asked me two questions there. I know that's the answer to one of them. I think I lost the other one.
No, you basically, I asked you what sets it apart from self-help or psychological and or
Okay, so it isn't really a self-help book, but I think it is a book that might be very helpful to an awful lot of people. My
Right.
own hope is that a person reading this might feel like this is telling this their own story that they'd never been able to tell. It
Right.
details William's journey through various traumas and misfortunes and his experience of being groomed. And it really tells the story of how the recovery from that grooming and abuse happens. I
Yes.
think there's a few things that set it apart. One is that it's a collaboration. This book has been written with William knowing all about it. So
Yes.
most case studies, you have a feel that maybe the person being written about wasn't too aware about all of this.
Yes.
You can say that about this book. This book is absolutely transparent between William and myself. It's a true story, and it's very accessible. I've written it so that it has no jargon in it. I wanted it to be for the common reader, not
Right.
just for, psychotherapists and counselors and so forth. But I mean, they might like it too.
Yeah.
But I think it's an accessible book that will help people. It can encourage people to draw their own timelines, like I was showing you, because the
Yes.
more we understand what we have lived through, the more we can make sense of ourselves.
Right. And that's so true. Sometimes I don't think people realize that, but when you visually can place everything out, you start to really see how things start to kind of pan out, and then you kind of understand, oh, I'm this way because, and you look back and you realize that certain actions and certain things in your life that occurred at a younger age caused you to become, or react the way you are now. But
That's
sometimes
right.
if you don't have it in front of you, and if it's not, if you don't draw it out or place it out, it's hard to, really understand why things have worked the way they have and why
That's
your
absolutely
emotions are the way they are. And I think visualization is so much easier for so many people. If you start to write things down in words, sometimes you miss things or you just don't realize things. But when you start to draw things and you start to, and I think it taps kind of into your subconscious too. It's like you maybe were drawing a picture of something you remembered as a child that had an impact on you. And then all of a sudden that triggers something, or there have been times where I've written something, I've drawn something, and all of a sudden an emotion out of nowhere just pops up. And then I think about it. And then I come to realizations about other things in my life, not realizing that the two were actually the two had connections with each other. So
That's
I
right.
feel.
And yeah, because we might find that we're living through the same pattern over and over again, but we don't realize it. And we don't realize that the problem we're having today with this person in our lives or with this work or something like that actually we can trace that back through
Yes.
years and years and years of relationships and living and life. And that's really what I try and do in my work is to see if it's possible to make sense of ourselves.
Yeah.
And as you say, I think when we do that, we can give ourselves time to reflect on, the kinds of dreams we've had through our lives. I mean, the unconscious sleeping dreams. And often I've had experiences of thinking, for example, about adults who can remember their childhood nightmares, right? And they will say that they had this repeated nightmare as a child. And the curious thing is that it makes some sort of sense. And you find yourself talking with a person who's 62, but at the same time, you're considering this information that was going around their dreams when they were 7 or 8 years old. And I find, really inspiring and fascinating. And, so all the years later, you're making a connection with information that was always there, but just back then, nobody was around to help someone make sense of it the right way. But like I said, it's not that there's something wrong with us, it's that things have happened to us. But trauma, abuse, problems make it very hard to keep track of those things. And that's why drawing a timeline out, which we can all do, we don't have to be, Leonardo da Vinci, we can all draw a timeline out. And I mean, you'll see from the cover here that, William used everything, kind of bits of cartoons and emojis and just ordinary things that were available.
I think that's amazing. Now, in your there's always a chapter that stands out or a concept in the book that makes readers stop and think. This could change your life, basically. Now, can you share one part of your book that you believe resonates with most readers?
Well, I think it's the point I've been talking about in this conversation about realizing that it's not that there's something wrong with us, it's that things have happened to us. And I wouldn't be able to pick it out, I don't think, off the top of my head, but there was a what I've done in the book is include dramatized conversations from the therapy, because I write a lot of notes after therapy. I never write notes during sessions, I write after the sessions. So the book is made up of kind of scenes from a play almost, and dramatized flashbacks, because I wanted the story of the life to be really interesting. I wanted to show it. And so at one point in all of that, there's an experience where William is about to throw the towel in, because in therapy you're never far from jeopardy, and often probably a lot of therapy gets given up much too early. But when he was about to give up, I said to him what I've been saying, that I don't think, it's that there is something wrong with you. I think things have happened to you. You just don't give yourself the chance to see it. And for some reason, that day on that conversation, he could hear that. And we could get into taking that further. So I can't exactly give you a page number, but I'd probably point you to that.
I like that though. It's true. There are many factors to be taken in, and sometimes it's very hard to just point out one thing also, because a lot of times little things could actually lead up to big things too. Just little things in your life at this point, maybe something that happened again, and then it triggers something, later on, so sometimes it's hard, if you're going over different things in the book, to pick out one specific chapter that makes a huge impact, because sometimes it's a lot of little things that could actually create a big impact also, I believe. Now, in your book, do you address any myths or common misconceptions about therapy or mental health?
Well, if I do, I probably do it through showing what therapy is like in action. So I show, for example, I didn't want to write a book where the therapist has all the best lines, And so if there were mistakes or accidents or problems that occurred in the therapy, I included them in the book. Okay. So I think what people might find interesting, and people have said this to me, is that it's really opened their eyes to what can happen in a psychotherapy, that they really didn't know how things unfolded. I mean, this is a piece of work that probably took 8 years. So it's a really in-depth study of two people getting to know each other and finding a way to talk about things that he hasn't been able to talk about all his life. So I think what I'd say is that this book really shows what a therapy is like, warts and all. It shows the difficult moments, and it shows that jeopardy is never far away, And that the thing that keeps a client coming back is often less to do with us and more to do with something they've kind of hooked into in working with us. The unconscious, as you referred to earlier. If that's
Right.
not there, then it's very difficult.
Yes, totally. Now, also, how do you hope the readers will see these topics differently after reading your book?
I think that my ideal would be that people give themselves a chance to think that some of the problems they may have been, keeping to themselves or not really knowing how to address or to live with, that they might, having read this, think, well, actually, maybe I could do something with this problem of mine if I could find a good person to talk to. And there are
Right.
lots of good people to talk to. So I suppose my hope would be that it might inspire someone to feel that they resonate with the story and that they want to explore themselves more. And in that way, I think it's I wouldn't call it a self-help book, but it is a book that could help you.
Right. Now, with so much misinformation about mental health, what are some of the key tr three key truths that you wish everyone understood about emotional well-being?
I suppose I'd say that number one, it tends, in my experience, our emotional well-being tends to be a product of what we were fortunate or unfortunate enough to live through, the families, the homes we came from, the chances and catastrophes that befell us or whatever they are,
Yes.
and the good fortune. Okay. So I'd say, first of all, that we are more a reflection of where we've come from than we might realize. I think that we can improve the position we're in. We can improve our emotional stability, just like, we can learn to look after a weak ankle, for example. This is one of the analogies I use in my emotional stability book,
Right.
this one, which is that you can think of emotional stability in the same way as you can think of looking after an ankle that you've sprained. As
Right.
long as you remember you've got a weak ankle, you can walk, run, dance, whatever. When you forget it, then you have accidents. You
Right.
wanted a third one, didn't you?
Right.
I think if I was going to say a third one, I'd say if you've been considering doing something, as in talking to a therapist, why not give yourself the chance?
Right.
But do it from remembering, you're not getting into anything unless you want to, right?
Yes.
Okay. And as I was saying earlier, go with having done some thinking, know what you want, know what you're interested to talk about. Yeah, how's that?
That sounds amazing. I think that's great. Now, for someone who's feeling stuck, whether personally or professionally, what's the best first step they should take to shift their mindset to move forward?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Because if we're feeling stuck, what we need really is something that gives us the room to see that there might be an alternative. But when we're
Yes.
very stuck, it's like we're shut in a room and there's no lights on. And,
Yeah.
so I suppose it might be that we try and, whilst taking care of ourselves and not, diving into drink, drugs, sex, relationships, or whatever,
Yes.
we try and change the position we're in a bit, change the perspective, so we can have a look at what's going on. We need somehow, if we're stuck, the problem we've got is we need to find a break from that stuckness. And
Yes.
that's difficult. But it might be that deciding to, go and speak to someone you trust, that would be ideal, I think. Possibly seeing a psychotherapist. It's a challenge, isn't it? Because you're stuck, but you're trying to find a little bit more space.
Yes, very
It's
true.
a challenge. I mean, I think often when I meet people, the problem they bring may be decades old.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. And you might have met them 30 years ago. You might have met them in another 30 years' time. You're just lucky where you meet them in that kind of continuum, aren't you?
Yeah.
But often those problems we know what our problems are like from a very early age or an early-ish age. I mean,
Yes,
I've
yes.
tended to find that when we go through adolescence, you know, that when we start dating, drinking, taking drugs, all that sort of stuff, that's when we can really start to discover what our psychology is like. You know, up to that point, we thought we were this kind of person. Then we find we're a little less stable. We're more possessive or jealous or something like this.
Right.
So I think often these problems, they're old. And the sooner we can get into finding a way of addressing them, the less they're going to blight, you know, the next 20 years of our lives.
Right. That's so true. Now, working so closely with human emotions and unconscious thoughts, you must have had moments of profound personal insight in your own life. Have there been any recent discoveries about yourself that you'd be willing to share with our listeners?
I think you know, I think I continue to take developing my own emotional stability very seriously.
Yeah.
I think that's my main project. In terms of working with people, I'm very privileged to develop, you know, conversations in confidential settings and to be very moved by the kinds of changes that people can bring to their lives. I don't think I do that, but between us, things can happen and things can shift for people.
Oh, yeah.
I think, yeah, I mean, I think emotional stability for me, and as I say, I think the work is a privilege to have such intimate and meaningful conversations on a good day.
Now, what's next for you? Are there exciting projects or collaborations or anything that you're exploring as you continue to make an impact in psychotherapy?
I think really for the moment, I'm still working on how to make my book come to life more. I think that this is a book that that a lot of people would find interesting to read.
Yeah.
And I mean, the work itself took 8 years. It's taken me about another 7 to get it finished and published.
Wow.
So I'm in the first, I mean, it was been out since March 25. So I'm really just committed to this project, I think. But if we met after March 26 and had
Yeah.
another conversation, I might know more. But at the
Yeah.
minute, I think there's more to do to bring a story of healing and
Right.
recovery and using creativity to do those things to a wider audience. That's my mission of the moment.
Wow. Now, what kind of services do you provide?
I provide one-to-one psychotherapy, so and th those tip that so that's a 50-minute hour, and typically I see people once weekly, but sometimes I see people more than that. This work in this book was sometimes the frequency was more intense than that.
Right.
All my work takes place either face to face or on Zoom, like we're speaking now. But that's really it. Conversations. I only work with one-to-one adults. So I don't work with couples. I don't work with people under 18. I just stick to my little niche or big niche.
Now, where can people find your book?
So they can find my book. Well, why not go to my website? And that's tobyingham.com. Okay. If you Google a guilty victim, you'll find it through Amazon, Karnak, bookshops. I mean, it's certainly on Google, so it should be easy to find it. Please do Google it. If you go to my website, you'll find it, and you'll find my other books. So that's the Emotional Stability book, which was that one, and this book on retroactive jealousy. I've done a lot of work with people who are plagued by anxieties about their partners, former partners. And I've done a lot of work to try and untangle that a bit.
Yeah.
So those three books, they're all available through the website, and Google carries information. So just look up Toby Ingham, tobyingham.com, and you know, get in contact with me, whatever. It would be great to hear people are reading it and what they're making of it.
I love that. Now, if people wanted to get more information about your services, or if they wanted to actually schedule maybe a Zoom call or meet you, they can go onto your website to get all that information.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very simple. So it's tobyingham.com, and you'll find there, contact is simple.
Wonderful. Now, if you had to look at today's conversation, you really wanted to emphasize on a couple important factors. What are some things that you'd like to emphasize today from our conversation?
Okay. Well, I think I put a dedication in this book, and that reads, "It's not that there is something wrong with us. Our problems relate to things that have happened to us. Remembering this can be life-changing. This book is for everyone who struggles with emotional stability." So I think the point I'd emphasize is that it's not that there's something wrong with us. Our problems relate to things that have happened to us.
Yes, and that's so true. That is so
It's
true.
just that we can, because we've been through difficult things, we lose track of that.
It is. We really do. And I think sometimes people are too hard on themselves, but it's a lot of times it is just things that happen to us during our lifetime that really impact us and change our lives, and if we can just recognize what those traumatic events are and then work with someone like yourself and learn how to
That's right.
overcome it, learn how to get rid of those negative feelings that are holding us back and learn how to cope with some of those emotions that are hurting us inside, we can move forward. And my famous quote is, I always say, the past is the past. We can't change the past, but we can focus on the present and work on ourselves to create a positive present future. And I think
Yes. That's
it's
right.
because sometimes people live in the past, but we can't, whatever happened to us in the past, we can't change. So the only thing we can do is focus on figuring out what those things are that really have traumatic events in our lives and work on overcoming them in the present
Yes.
tense.
Yes. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because we always carry the past with us, but we're always moving into the future at the same time. And so, the present is that sort of moment, like you and I are talking now, as we move, all the time we're moving. So that's why I think the more we can do to look after today, the less we're going to be unpicking today, tomorrow.
That's very true. That's so true. Well, this has been amazing. Thank you so much, Toby, for being on the show. I really
Oh,
like
thank you
this
for having me.
conversation. Oh, you're very welcome. You've provided a wealth of knowledge, and I'm really happy that you came on the show to share your wisdom about psychotherapy and also to share about your books. And congratulations on your books. It's a huge accomplishment, and I wish you the best of luck with this book that you've just written. And I hope that you'll come on our show in the future, and we could talk more about different areas of psychotherapy and different ways that psychotherapy have a huge impact on others in their lives.
Stacey, it's been a great conversation, and that would be great. So yeah, let's do it again.
I'd love to. You have a great day.
You too, Stacey. Take care.